Hi everyone, Matt Polka with ACA. Welcome to our Cable Talk podcast, where our guest today is veteran industry journalist, publisher, and all-around good guy, Paul Maxwell. Thanks for joining us, and let's get started with Cable Talk. Welcome back, everybody, to Cable Talk. I am so pleased to be here with a good friend of ACA, a good friend of mine, someone I've had the privilege of working with in the industry for quite some time, and that is our good friend, Paul Maxwell. Paul, glad to have you on Cable Talk.
Glad to be here, and it's an honor.
Why don't we just start out first, maybe telling our listeners a little bit about your background in media and the industry, and what got you focused on covering this industry for a career?
It's, you know, like a lot of things that happened about 50 years ago, it was an accident. I mean, I went to college and I studied theology, and I had all these degrees, a couple of them. And when I graduated, I was only 21 years old, and I got drafted. I didn't get ordained, so it kind of made a mess. I went into the Army, and I was taking orders from stupid sergeants, and I wanted to take orders from stupid colonels, so I went to OCS. I became an artillery officer, and they sent me to Vietnam, and then they put me into working for Stars and Stripes. That's how I got into media. I could write. I'd co-started the Southwestern Theological Review, which still exists, and it was an interesting time to get into media that way. When I got back to Colorado at Fort Carson, I was an artillery officer. What are you going to do when you get out of the Army after 4 years? And I was still only 25. So I saw an ad in a paper from a little bitty publishing company called Communications Publishing Corp, run by Stan Searle and his brother Bob. And they hired me to do some work with a monthly magazine about two-way radio. And I got interested in their cable side, in Cable TV Newsweekly. And started writing they used to do a portrait of somebody every week. Oh, yeah. I wrote that for quite a while. And I just grew into the industry. I met a whole lot of the players and liked the people. The next thing I knew, I was, you know, covering that and all over the world in Europe and other places. And, of course, they fired me finally and I had to go start something else. And then, That got me started, and you should ask Stan someday why he fired me. And he actually told me one day he regretted it, which is an interesting thing. Wow. But then Cablevision Magazine and Multichannel News and Cable Facts and a whole bunch of other stuff, I just got deeply involved in an industry that was collegial, that had entrepreneurs. And my dad had been an entrepreneur, and I guess my grandfather, both of them, and it kind of got into my blood. I think it's got the greatest people. It's done the best service for America. It's created things. It keeps innovating. And I love it. And thank God everybody lets me kind of participate.
I just want to come back to your first job with the Searle brothers. Stan Searle, who is a founder of ACA, was a guest here on Cable Talk. And of course, we just marked the passing of his brother Bob recently, who was so instrumental to us at ACA starting a publication called Independent Cable News. So while Stan and Bob had cable in their blood, they also had a bit of ink helping us to get on the map with Independent Cable News. Any fond memories of the Searle brothers?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Bob was a very good boss. And Stan ran the company and did a fine job. I mean, I must say that one of the ones I started kind of crimped them for a while, but they hung in there and kept doing good things, and they're very good people. Bob was a good guy. Stan is still one of the nicest and most thoughtful guys on the fringe of this business now. He comes to the Cable Center things once in a while, and it's always great to see him.
You know, one of the issues that we face all the time is we're the cable industry. And it's with consumers sometimes a little bit of love-hate, but consumers do appreciate the services that we provide. But, you know, it's a tough relationship sometimes. How can we perhaps, you know, improve that relationship with our customers, or maybe get over some of the missteps of the way past to help to show customers really how vital the services our members and other providers provide each and every day?
It's a good question, and it's part of the problem anymore is the sense that the word cable has a pejorative people think of it that way. They don't like it. You know, the cable guy was always late. Well, you know, we built this business by bootstraps and financial finagling that a lot of people copied. And it all paid off, of course, for us. But the secret to the business existing and doing what it does is the ability to morph ahead of the curve for every service it did provide. I mean, if it hadn't have been for the loops of two-way cable for controlling the set-top box a little bit, we never would have had figured out how to marry it to ARPANET and create the Internet. Because mm-hmm. cable really did. And it's hard to take credit for some of these things that we did as an industry, you know, in fits and starts and fixing it as we went. Instead of delivering a new Mercedes, we delivered a Yugo and then created a Mercedes. And that's hard to sell. It's been started by Comcast calling itself Xfinity, Charter calling itself Spectrum, and others trying to find a way to better name themselves, I think. But the other thing that cable's really, really doing is better service. Mm-hmm. Across the whole industry, I think. You don't see the same kind of complaints we did before, but it's hard to change, you know, a history. It really is. But guess what? It's all going to happen for us as the so-called cord cutting and the OTT, so-called, and all these other things do, because that changes interestingly, it changes what the networks do and what programming does into a retail business from what used to be a wholesale business. Mm-hmm. And we're in the whole retail business of creating the connection that enables all the other things.
Now we're really the broadband guys, and that's what we have to be first and foremost as we go out to customers. And I think broadband is the most important element of infrastructure in our country today because it truly does connect in every way, shape, and form. But there's also that tension, Paul, when you think of who we have been as cable operators, where we provide certain content you couldn't get elsewhere, but now where with broadband, we're really just the pipe to deliver it. Some have questioned, you know, do we really want to become that quote-unquote dumb pipe and nothing else? But our pipe is enabling the future, so I don't know if necessarily that's a bad thing.
I don't think it's a bad thing at all. I think naming it that would be the same mistake we made with the word cable. We keep naming it after some tangible thing instead of the service we provide. And we have a tendency, I mean, cable labs, everything, the cable center, you know, the international cable internet and whatever, and, you know, the American Cable Association, and all of the names are that thing in the ground and that box in the house. More and more it's going to be we're the nexus of it all, the connecting point. And it's that connection that all these businesses that we're part of do. And I would stretch it to include, you know, the upcoming 5G if they can live up to their hype.
It is a very good point about the services that we provide. And maybe that ties into where I wanted to start our discussion, where we look back at the creation of this industry and some of the personalities and foundations that really made this industry what it is today, from simple ideas in the mountains of Pennsylvania, Kentucky, Oregon, Colorado, and elsewhere, and really built the Internet and provided the Internet service. Why don't you give us some perspective of, you know, those early days and what some of the founding principles of our industry was with those that were trailblazers, and then we can migrate that discussion over to what we see in the present and then to the future.
One of the first people I met, were, of course, were the Searles, and then I met the guys at TCI, Bob Magnus, and Malone wasn't there yet. He was at Gerald, and I met John C. And got to know Bill Daniels really well. He kind of is one of those situations where you meet somebody and they just always kind of look out for you and are helpful the rest of your life, he was. And a very good friend. I mean, he, you know, when I had a kid, the kid would, and I would go to the ball games and she would sit on Bill's lap to watch the games in his box. And it just, one time, and he called my wife, Evie, before I could get home to tell her I'd been fired, and he told her not to worry about anything. he was a close and good friend. And at every stage, if I needed something or I was in between things, he would find something for me to do while I thought of what I could start again. And every time I started something, he was right there with a handout. And watching him, he was one of the greatest guys that ever lived, in my estimation, just about how he helped create the industry by building what became multiple system operators, or MSOs, because he was a broker. I mean, he was a doer just whatever needed to be done, he was doing it. And he would create MSOs on his own and then sell them off. He was a very smart man, but he was really a kind and, a friend. All of the people in the beginning were trying just to make sure, because the industry grew up because of the luck of Muscari, as it happened. Mm-hmm. We took signals and made a connection from the broadcaster to people who couldn't get an over-the-air signal. That's what started it, and that's what it was when I got in it. And, up in Montana, there were twin lead systems that were only a handful of houses. But we provided something people wanted. And don't remember when, it got kind of throughout the semi-rural parts of America, small towns and stuff at first. And the franchising wars were interesting to watch. And there were, people blood on the floor on those, but then everybody got up and kept working together. It was a collegial approach to the world. What can we do? What can we offer? How do we offer it? And then the big changes came, the satellite distributed network systems to the systems. Home box office came along and really changed everything. When the trucks you've heard about the truck chasers. That was when HBO was in small towns in Kansas. And I actually got to see that in one of the Cablevision magazine stories we did on the ground. And I got to say, all of these people who started the cable industry were from different backgrounds, different senses, different educations, different world knowledges, but they all managed to keep working together and keep moving it forward. And then the big changes came and the big companies got involved. And John Malone came along with working with Bob Magnus, and John's mathematical ability and his belief in scale helped change the industry and build the big, big companies we've got today. It wouldn't have happened without him.
Are there any aspects of our industry today that you see from back when, the principles that still exist? So many people ask me all of the time about trends. Everybody's looking into their crystal balls for answers for the future. What are some lessons perhaps we should learn from as we look back, considering that we're blazing a broadband future going forward?
Well, throughout the history of this infrastructure creator, the thing that sticks most in my mind was, my God, that's really a different thing. What are we going to do? How are we going to make room for it in the infrastructure? And remember the first two-way stuff, just that really created a conundrum for a lot of businesses. They had to build more strand. They had to be, CommScope may provide better cable. And it just kept changing like that. And the biggest thing about the industry, it was never afraid to try, and then when something worked, roll it out nationally as fast as possible, even though they were over different companies. And look, what happened to the telephone business, which was a big, bugaboo for cable in the beginning, what the descendants of the telephone companies, are nothing but mimicking what this business built. I mean, think about it. Fios and what used to be called U-verse, I guess, AT&T is more right. AT&T now. They're nothing but cable systems. We, from a standpoint of dealing with Washington and dealing with other aspects of the financial markets and stuff, you know, kind of wink at that, but really should have embraced it, in my view, right. And put our arms around them and change them. When, you know, satellite came along, and cable provided an answer to that, extending their marketplace, and that was the one time when we realized that the companies were getting too big to be fully collegial, because mm-hmm. that was a good idea to compete with itself on its fringes and go back to the markets that made us good in the first place, all the quasi-rural. I think that was a mistake that the cable industry made, and it was a rare mistake.
How do you see the interaction of our members, cable operators, broadband providers, and big tech here as time goes on?
It's a good question, and there's a model for it, I think, and that's in the old the days of the railroad expansion and its beginning, and the Gilded Age. These guys have built something too big, and the governments have allowed that because they kind of provided a service that didn't meet the old rules for breaking up a company because they were going to charge a customer more, the way the first AT&T was broken up. That's probably a model for what's going to happen with Google and Facebook in particular. Twitter's not that big, after all.
Right.
And that's going to shake out in an odd way. But what they're doing in Europe with what they call the GDPR, which is the mm-hmm. tracking of data, and that, I think, is going to come into the United States quickly. And one argument that what the remnant of cable can make is that, like with retransmission consent, we might pay them to be on our thing. I don't think that's going to live after Facebook and the others get big and the over-the-top changes.
Right.
You know, the broadcasters are making the same mistake a lot of cable networks made. They're raising their rates too fast.
In your experience in covering the industry, it's not only been business and innovation and other developments, but it has been the impact of Washington. As you look at all of the stories that you've covered, just give us a sense of your perspective on how Washington has really shaped this industry for both good or ill.
Don't forget the FCC was much more easy to deal with back then. They were like, what's cable and what are we going to do with it? And okay, we'll let it build out. And remember, some of the very early arguments were, well, is it good for the customer? What are we going to do from a regulatory standpoint? And there are fits and starts in that. And we're seeing fits and starts with the mega companies out there. And my thought is they need to be reined in seriously. And if they could figure out a way to make the Internet not quite so free, but I don't think that's going to happen for quite a while. But somebody's going to start charging when the 5G comes along for access to it. And that's going to change the economic balance that's out of whack right now. I mean, all of those companies ride on cable, in effect, without paying for it. And that's got to change in some manner. It's like it's going to have to be legislatively, probably. Sort of like retrans. It's hard to argue against the broadcaster getting some small fee. It's hard to argue against that. It's going to get easy to argue with what they're charging. And where we got to rein them in that manner.
First, let's talk about retransmission consent, because it is a problem that vexes our members, because these rules are 25 plus years old. Retransmission consent will be 26 years old in 2019, and it's coupled with rules like network non-duplication that go back into the 60s and 70s and create a monopoly marketplace. It is such a difficult argument for us when we talk about this issue with Washington to try to get them to listen, to understand first that they were the ones who put these rules in place and now have an obligation to do something about it, to fix it, to update them, to get rid of them, so that consumers and competition aren't harmed as they are today. How can we get DC to better listen to this issue and finally be willing to take up the mantle and do something about it in what is today a very, very difficult political environment we're in?
I think the only way is to, organize consumers. They're the ones that are impacted by this. Cable's made a very small right step by putting it on the bill is just what it is. And you can show a growth of cost with absolutely no rationale behind that, other than they think we could get away with it. And that has to be a consumer thing. And there's a fear factor you can build for broadcasters, and that's what's happening to the long-tail networks from the old cable provider idea. They all raise their rates too far.
Well, what's interesting too, Paul, is the fact when you factor in cord cutting and cord shaving, how many people, well, cord cutting in particular, how many people literally are doing away with their cable
right.
service, which includes the broadcasters, in favor of a broadband service. At the
right.
same time, the broadcasters, the local broadcasters, are being squeezed by the networks for reverse compensation.
Yeah.
So the pie is shrinking.
Exactly. Yeah, all of those things managed to get shifted, and the bigger ones got too big.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good point. And watching this merger of the broadcasters trying to get so big so fast is a warning sign, I think, about retrans. And you've made that very clear to everybody. But you're right. How do we do it in Washington? And I think it's time to talk, as you do, to the Congress people. I don't think FCC matters on this. We have to figure out a way to make the Congress people understand that what is actually happening is a tax on people for free TV.
Yeah,
I know you do the best you can on that, but for some reason, and I don't know why, it just doesn't seem to get through.
As we talk about big tech, as we think about the content that they provide, whether it's a Google, it's a Facebook, et cetera, you're right. They are using the broadband networks for access, for distribution to millions
right.
and billions even. But there's no,
yep.
there's no consideration passed there to the broadband provider. And right now, neither are those big tech providers asking for any kind of wholesale rate as well to for a broadband provider to be able to carry those services. What do you see? I mean, do you see it in terms of someday the broadband provider being able to ask for access, or more likely, because of how big tech is, big tech asking for what amounts to a wholesale payment before any broadband provider gets access to their service?
That, I think, is coming, the latter. They're the greedy ones, and they already have margins that, you can't even, in all honesty, understand.
That's a very scary thing when we think of how our members have worked so hard to deliver broadband to consumers without any kind of limit, discrimination, any kind of, throttling of any kind.
I know.
And it would certainly be mind-boggling to see a Google or a Facebook say, if you want your broadband subscribers to have access to our service, why don't you pay us $1 or $2 per subscriber per month? I
right.
hope that day doesn't come, and we'll be fighting against it for sure.
Well, yeah, of course. It'll come only after 5G is widespread and lives up to its claims.
Do you really think it will live up to its claims, though? Do you really think 5G really will?
That's a good question. I kind of think there's an awful lot of hype around it. There's companies like the one that Chet Kanogia does that it's called Starry that
right.
does the broadband wireless, but it's fixed wireless. It's not a real cellular service.
Mm-hmm.
But that's an interesting competitor to a cable operator.
It's been great having
okay.
you. We could go on for hours, that's for sure.
Probably could.
What would you say is the greatest innovation you've seen our industry produce?
You know what I think it is? I think it's that connection that we talked about before. I think we always looked at it as you know, the cable wire going into the home, and that's all it kind of carried, all these things that we, you know, added to and kept adding to and kept changing, and then broadband came along and the whole world changed. I would really rephrase it and say the biggest thing that the cable industry did was innovate at every step that was possible. And boy, you don't see that in many companies or many industries.
That's for sure.
That to me is the biggest thing. That ability to morph ahead of the curve and to then deploy faster before anybody knew quite what you did.
Paul, who's the most interesting person you've ever covered in our industry and why?
Oh, it was, you know, the most interesting person. That's a good one. It's more like there's too many. I mean, you have Hall of Fame that the Cable Center has.
Yeah.
You know, list all of those people and the more coming this year. And take a look someday. Walk along the pictures on the wall, and you'll see different generations of entrepreneurs who really, in every step, changed everything. That's pretty cool. That's why I like it.
Well, couldn't have said it better, that's for sure. Paul Maxwell, it is great to have you as our guest here on Cable Talk. Thank you for your friendship, help and support of our members for the many days and hours you've covered them over your career, and it's great to have you here as a guest at Cable Talk.
My pleasure. I appreciate it, and I wish all of the best of luck for the ACA.
Well, thanks, Paul, and thanks to you for listening once again to another edition of Cable Talk. We will see you next time, everybody. Take care. Bye now. Thanks again for joining us on ACA's Cable Talk podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Podomatic, and americancable.org/thehub. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. We love to hear from you with your comments and suggestions.